It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
Nope.
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey. Hey.
And Chad P.
Bad company as
Wouldn't
well.
Want to play with his kid.
No, 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 no.
Daddy.
Go away. Go away. Go over there.
It's okay. It's okay.
Class is in.
Hey, good afternoon. It's the radio. Let's put on a radio show. My mom can make the costumes. My name is Joe Burns. This is Rock School. Sitting to my immediate right, the man who's laughing, it's...
Chad P.
There he is. Hey, folks. We got a good show for you today. Well, we hope we have a good show for you today. Yeah. It's all about rock and roll managers today.
I don't like managers.
You don't like managers?
No,
the
not
men
a fan.
Behind the I say men, we have one woman today.
Cool.
There aren't very many women managers, but we got one woman today. So the men behind the rock stars. Again, Rock School broadcasting live from the campus of Southeastern Louisiana University. The man who runs this radio station here likes us to say that. We'll call him
Todd.
Todd. We'll go with Todd.
Okay.
And a shout out to our affiliate right here at the top of the hour. They are
WESU Middletown, Connecticut.
88.1 right there on your FM dial. Many managers. Many rock and roll managers, but if you turn to somebody just out of the blue and say, name a rock and roll manager, $100 says they're going to come up with Colonel Tom Parker.
Are you serious?
You think so? You don't think they'd come up with Colonel Tom Parker?
No, that's not why I'm asking. Are you serious? You know I watch pro wrestling.
Oh, they'd come up with Lou Albano? Is that what you're saying?
No.
They'd come up with somebody else? Who would you come up with?
I wouldn't come up with anyone, but there was a wrestling manager back in the day in the old NWA.
Yes.
Called Colonel Rob Parker.
Oh, really?
And now I see as a blatant ripoff.
Exactly.
Of this Tom Parker.
A straight ripoff.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, future rock managers took their style, just blatantly ripped it off. They said, I am an incarnation of Colonel Tom Parker. Colonel Parker, who is actually a colonel. Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis gave him the honorary title of Colonel.
Did he wear, like, the white suit and the hat and everything?
Actually, yeah. He was an absolute showman himself. You know Elvis never performed overseas?
No, I didn't know that.
Now, somebody's going to say, well, he performed in Hawaii. I guess technically there's a sea in there, but
that's
Hawaii's
not overseas.
That's a state.
That's a state.
That's right. Do you know why?
Why?
Parker was an illegal alien.
Oh, that's not good.
He was from the Netherlands. Had he left the U.S. and came back, he would have been immediately arrested. His name was Andreas Cornelius Drees van Kuijk.
I like Tom Parker better.
A little bit better, sure. Originally a manager for Minnie Pearl, Hank Snow, Eddie Arnold, he was given the title the Colonel. And then, as he worked for RCA, he said... There's this guy. They're trying to sell him from Sun Records. Get him. Get him. Pay what you have to pay. Get that kid Elvis. And when RCA said, okay, we're going to get this Elvis kid, but he is on your shoulders, Tom Parker said, you bet. He is on my shoulders. So he took this Elvis kid along and he said, now look, son, I am going to turn you into a star. So I'm going to be your manager. And Elvis really didn't understand the business. And he said, okay, I'll take you on as my manager. So I owe you the traditional 10%? No, you owe me 25%.
Ooh.
Oh, okay, Mr. Parker. That's Colonel Parker. And by the way, after about 2 years, yeah, we're going to split it all 50-50. Really? Oh, it gets worse. Jailhouse Rock. We'll be back with more.
Hey,
man, don't you be no square. You can't find a partner, use a wooden chair. Elvis the Pelvis. Yeah, it was Tom Parker who made sure Elvis had every pill that he wanted to have. It was Tom Parker that made sure that when Elvis gave money away as a donation, he did not take it off his taxes. Believe it or not, because Tom Parker said, hey, if you take it off your taxes, it's not a real donation. It was Tom Parker that made sure that when Elvis was making movies, and Elvis said, I don't really want to make any movies. You see, Elvis was Elvis. He could have told the people in, you know, in Hollywood that, you know, go pound sand.
Yeah.
Parker said, no, you go make those movies. Young man, you know, live up to your contract. Parker wanted the money. You know, Elvis could have said, you know, go, I don't want to do this anymore. When Elvis died, just to tell you another kind of thing a manager this guy was, he worked Elvis to death. Just to tell you what kind of a guy he was, when Elvis died, after the funeral, what did Tom Parker do?
What?
You know, obviously, you know, hung around, I'm very sorry. Left the funeral, shot to New York. The first thing he did was negotiate deals for Elvis's memorabilia.
Wow.
Parker was addicted to gambling, and at the end of it, he made almost $100 million off of Elvis. When he died, he had less than $1 million to his name.
Wow.
Died January 21st, 1997 of a stroke in Las Vegas, Nevada. Gambling. Died at the age of 87. Never once left the country.
Was Elvis his only client?
At that time.
Wow.
At that time. Can you believe that?
Woo.
That's the guy. That's
true
the
blue
first,
manager.
That's the first big one. Colonel Tom Parker. Don't be cruel, man. Don't be like that. Don't be cruel on Rock School.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel.
Boom.
Hey, I got a question.
Shoot.
Colonel Tom Parker supplied the pistols for Elvis when Robert Goulet came on the television
set? No, I
set?
Think he actually had the pistols all by himself, all by himself. Hey, here's a completely unrelated story.
Go.
I'm at Lowe's on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Looking for links of chains. I'm walking along and I say to, and I'm just sort of staring, looking, you know, because Lowe's is this giant box store. I'm looking around, I don't know where this is, and a guy stops me and he says, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm looking for links of chain. He points at me and he says, where have I heard your voice before?
No way.
And I said, I don't know. I'm on the radio, you know. And he said, oh, okay. We walk a little bit farther. And he turns around to me and he says, you're the guy in Rock School. I said,
what?
Yep, yeah, I am. Honest to goodness.
Hey!
So, hey, shout out to Rick at Lowe's.
Hey, Rick.
Thanks for listening, Rick.
Fan number eight.
I'm almost positive. If we could just get a couple more fans,
we'll
we might be
digits.
Into double digits. I think that would just be fantastic.
What are you doing with chain?
We're hanging things because we're having a 4th of July party.
Okay.
And we're just hanging things on chains and all of that. And so,
all right.
Yeah.
Cool,
it's,
man.
So when you get over, there's going to be, you know, party things going on with things hanging from chains.
Chains.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
You have to just suspend yourself in the air for a short amount of time on
Yay.
Chains. Yeah, no. We're talking about rock managers here today on Rock School. And we finish with the big one, Colonel Parker. That's the guy that kept Elvis going. If you don't come up with Colonel Tom Parker, you may come up with the manager of the Beatles. Brian Epstein. Mm. Now, most people think of the Beatles in their early days, the suits, the haircuts, the mop tops. What a lot of people don't know is before the Beatles were latched onto by a manager, Brian Epstein, these guys were nasty guys. Leather jackets, jeans, they ate and drank and smoked on stage. They went to Hamburg, Germany to cut their teeth. I mean, they played in houses of ill repute, if you will.
Wow.
They started taking uppers, amphetamines, keep them going. I mean, they would play for something like 8 hours straight because they had to be on stage. And when they came back, they were this nerdy, I'm sorry, I tried to say nasty and dirty and came out nerdy. Yeah. Nasty, dirty band and such. Well, there was this guy named Brian Epstein who was already a successful manager. He was on top of artists like Jerry and the Pacemakers, Billy Kramer and the Dakotas. He went to see this new
happening group that was all over Liverpool, went to see him at the Cavern Club. He persuaded Decca Studios to record a demo. He paid for it. He then took it to George Martin and said, listen to these guys. You got to hear these guys. They're fantastic. George Martin said, they're great. Clean them up. So Epstein said, okay, you got it. You guys, if you're coming with me, I can make you stars, but you're going to wear suits and ties on stage. You're going to stop swearing. And at the end of every bow, I'm sorry, at the end of every performance, you're going to stop, take one step backwards, and you're going to bow. That's where that famous stop, take one step back, and bow. He also did the first nasty thing that most people know about the Beatles.
What?
He fired Pete Best and brought in Ringo Starr. We'll tell you more in a minute.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, 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 yeah. You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday, yeah. It's you, she's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody loves the Beatles more than me.
Yeah?
I named my son after a Beatles song. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. This is Rock School as we talk about the managers of rock and roll groups. We're talking about Brian Epstein, and we've already talked about the things that he did to make the Beatles the Beatles. Let's talk about some of the nastier sides of things. Brian Epstein was, well, he was a drug addict. He took a lot of amphetamines, and he was also homosexual, and this is something that a lot of Beatles fans either say absolutely did not happen or absolutely did happen. It was believed that for a short time, he had a fling with John Lennon.
What?
John Lennon was supposedly one of his original lovers. They had a time away, a month away. Some people believe that, yes, it happened. Some people believe that, no, it didn't happen. Well, the Beatles were moving outside of Epstein's control, and for a while, if you remember, they went away to be with the Maharishi Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Actually, it was only Harrison who really bought the whole thing. It never really gets told that when the Beatles all came back that John Lennon really talked down the Maharishi. He really, you know, come on, this is just, give me a break. It was Harrison that really bought the whole thing, that really said, wow, this is wonderful. Epstein died during their time. A lot of people say that he killed himself. Well, maybe... maybe not. You see, his father just died.
Okay.
He was also suffering from addiction to amphetamines, and which means he was always up. And in order to go to sleep, which he had to do, he had to take something to bring himself down, mm-hmm. down. So he either killed himself or he inadvertently attempting to get himself to just simply go to sleep.
Killed himself.
Took too much. Yeah. So it was either an inadvertent death or
an intentional death.
An intentional death.
Okay.
So it's up to you. Did the Beatles attend the funeral? No.
What?
And the reason they didn't attend the funeral was they knew if they went, nobody would be able to mourn for Brian Epstein.
Well,
because
okay.
It would be nothing but screaming Bobby Soxer girls, Beatles, 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 Beatles. No, 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 we're here. See, today I think you could get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Not back then. Beatles, Rock School.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. To you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright.
There's a quick story of Brian Epstein as we talk about the managers of rock and roll.
Hey, Doc, I feel all right.
Sure. I don't know why you wouldn't. It's been a hard day's night. We're going to take a quick pause. 1 minute. We're going to come back with a man who was referred to as 300 pounds of influence. Peter Grant, coming up in 1 minute on Rock School. This is Rock School as we talk about rock and roll managers. Peter Grant is who we're up to right now, often referred to. 300 pounds. Get a hold of the movie. The Song Remains the Same. You can't miss the guy. Huge. He's huge. huge beard, huge mustache, always walking around with a giant stogie and a cane. Didn't need the cane. It was just one of those things. I am an English gentleman. The size of a barn, but I am an English gentleman known as 300 pounds of influence. You know, where does Peter Grant sit? Wherever he wants to. He was a record executive for Swan Song Records. He was known as the manager for the Yardbirds, Bad Company, and of all of them, Led Zeppelin.
Yay!
Led Zeppelin was the one he knew. But the thing about it is, you know, I'm going to tell a lot of stories about managers who were awful, who were terrible to their people, who only paid them 20 pounds a week, who made them borrow money from them, who were just terrible to their artists. Peter Grant is the absolute opposite. Phil Everly was actually, you know, part of the Everly Brothers, obviously, was actually part of a touring crew that Peter Grant was part of. And he states, quote, without his efforts, him being Peter Grant, without his efforts, musicians would have no careers. Peter was the first to make sure that the artists came first, and what we got paid was paid properly. It was through Led Zeppelin that Peter Grant really improved pay and conditions for musicians in dealings with concert promoters. He made a deal for Led Zeppelin through Atlantic Records that saw them get a $200,000 advance. It was the highest royalty rate ever, five times that of the Beatles. And he started getting concert gate splits. This is back when you didn't take an amount of money up front.
Yeah.
You made a split at the gate.
Okay.
And it was either 70-30, 80-20, or 90-10, depending on what the, you know, what the date was. Stories differ on what they were. 90-10? Well, yeah, it was Led Zeppelin. It was a 90-10 split of a obvious sellout that night. So Peter Grant, for all the nasty that he was, there's a story of one night his son is along for the trip, and a guy who was putting up posters, his son walked up and took a poster down, and the poster guy slapped his son.
Ooh.
And Peter Grant and two or three thugs basically beat this man to the point where the room was painted with this guy's blood.
Wow.
And I mean, he was just a nasty, nasty guy, but for the people he was working for, he was good. So Peter Grant and their big and his big group, Led Zeppelin, Immigrant Song, Rock School. Peter Grant.
They beat the guy to death over a poster.
Well, they didn't beat him to death, but they certainly sent him close to it. I mean, you could see it from where he was. Peter Grant, the record executive for Swan Song Records and the manager of Led Zeppelin. Of course, Yardbirds and Bad Company as well.
Wouldn't want to play with his kid.
No, 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 no.
Daddy.
Go away. Go away. Go over there.
It's okay. It's okay.
The big thing, though, is the fact that he was so instrumental in bettering the conditions and the pay for the people that he dealt with.
Good for him.
What was so bad was when John Bonham died.
Mm-hmm.
It sent him into seclusion, almost to his death. He became a speaker very late in his life when his son, apparently the one, he only had the one son, the one who was slapped by this poster guy, said to him, Dad, you got to come back out of, you know, seclusion. You got to come back to life. He had a decent little business going around speaking to people, explaining his management style because it was seen as so successful in this world of rock and roll. He died of a heart attack November 21st, 1995, driving a car with his son in the car. Had a heart attack. His son was able to bring the car to a stop and died right there in the automobile. I want to play one more tune from an artist that he was a tour manager for. He managed overall a lot of these groups from Europe, but when American groups came over, he was the tour manager for them. Let me give you a list of some of them. Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, Chuck Berry, Brian Hyland, Little Richard, the Everly Brothers. I think I gave a quote from Phil Everly just a moment ago. And this last one.
Who?
Bo Diddley.
Oh.
This is the first show we're recording since the death of Bo Diddley. We're a little bit ahead, obviously. Bo Diddley passed away June 2nd, 2008. You know how they always say it's three songs? If it's three chords, it's a rock song?
Yeah.
Bo Diddley only ever needed one. This is the original hand jive. He was a tour manager, Peter Grant, for Bo Diddley. Bo Diddley passed away June 2nd of heart failure, and he was one of the originals. He said that, I didn't steal anything from them.
they stole from me. The original hand jive, this is Mona, Bo Diddley, Rock School. There you go. Let's do it on a hand job.
I had to play this song. In high school.
That's Mona.
I had to play this song on the drums. Because they did, oh, for real. They did a live performance of Grease Lightning. And we had to learn hand jive.
That's all, yeah.
For
well,
the band.
That song and then hand jive and a bunch of others too. It's the same thing. Chunk a chunk a chunk ka chunk 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 a chunk a chunk ka chunk chunk shaving a haircut.
Yeah.
Two bits. Yeah, that little thing, that Bo Diddley shaving a haircut, two bits rhythm. Yeah. Too bad, too bad. Well, you know, nobody gets out alive. You know? But you know, did you live a nice long life? Yes. Did you die surrounded by friends and family? Yeah. We should all be so lucky. Welcome to the bottom of the hour, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rock School. We're talking about managers. We're going to talk about Alan Klein, and we're going to play the Verve's Bittersweet Symphony. But
I love
first,
this song.
Just a touch of business with you. KSLU Rock School. Look for that little thing on the side that says Rock School. By all means, click on that puppy. All the episodes are there. Chad's now keeping the website, so it is completely up to date.
Right.
Pictures of us, pictures of Chad's brother. For some reason.
Yeah, he's up there.
I'm not sure why that's up there.
That's right.
Want to send us an email? You can do it through the website. There's a nice little form there. Or if you want to just straight away get rid of the website, go right to your email client. Here's how you do it.
KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. And, of course, the Rock School website, part of KSLU.org.
Oh, did I miss the org?
Yeah, you just said KSLU Rock School.
Oh, that's dumb.
Our 8 fans know where we are.
I can't wait till we get 10 fans.
How about that?
Then we're a real radio show.
That's right.
Alan Klein. Go ahead. I'm going to give you a quick stump. When did Alan Klein show up on this show before? It was about, 8 or 9 shows back.
Oh, yes. And I believe it was the lawsuit show.
That's right. Copyright infringement
Copyright
show.
Copyright infringement
right.
show.
He was involved with the thing between the Shirelles and George Harrison.
Correct.
Over He's So Fine and My Sweet Lord.
That's right.
Alan Klein took over for Brian Epstein 2 years after his death. He worked with Bobby Darin and Sam Cooke. The thing about it is, John Lennon liked Alan Klein's negotiating all these mega deals for the Rolling Stones and Ringo Starr. George followed the same, but Paul never liked Alan Klein. He was dropped by the Stones for misappropriation of funds. Harrison sued him, obviously, over the thing with My Sweet Lord. Mm-hmm. He was also found to have stolen funds for George's concert for Bangladesh.
Yep.
Klein just basically went away until he surfaced once again suing the group we're about to play, The Verve, over their use of the Stones last time. Listen to the chorus of this song we're about to play, Bittersweet Symphony. It has in it the same music as the Rolling Stones' This Could Be the Last Time, This Could Be the Last Time, which Klein got through part of his negotiation with the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did is he sued the Verve, he got money from the Verve, he then turned around and sold the song to Nike and made himself a multi-jillionaire. Guy's nasty.
Well.
Then what he did was he moved to L.A., picked up one client. He's still alive. He's still living in L.A. Guess who his one client is?
That would be
Phil Spector.
No way.
Honest to goodness.
Ah.
So that's the story of Alan Klein. Give me the stump
on
Bittersweet Symphony.
Bittersweet Symphony. Very,
shoot.
Very simple. You actually get hints on this one.
Okay.
If you need them, okay. What NFL team used the song Bittersweet Symphony as their entrance music during their recent Super Bowl appearance?
The Seattle Seahawks.
Very nice.
I actually knew that.
Good
yeah.
for you, dude.
I remember seeing the game and it coming out and saying to my wife, oh, I love this tune. Yep.
Look
Listen
at
closely.
You.
Oh, thank you. Listen closely to the chorus. It's a little slower, but it's the last time by the Verve. I'm sorry, by the Rolling Stones. And this is the Verve's Bittersweet Symphony on Rock School. Just
goes on and on, doesn't it?
I love it.
It's amazing the stuff that sticks in your head, isn't it?
This song really does truly relax me.
Does it?
Yes.
Yeah, a couple of romantic candles and long walks along the beach or something?
In the moonlight, yeah.
Is that what it is? We're going to take a quick break. We're going to take it just a touch early because we want to do two songs by a father and a daughter. The father we'll start with. He's got a nickname, the Al Capone of Pop. He's not a very nice guy. And you'll find out who he is in 1 minute, Rock School. This is Rock School as we march through some of the managers of rock and roll. There's many managers, but some of them have really made names for themselves. This one, the Al Capone of Pop.
Who?
His name is Don Arden. Now, I'm going to mention another guy here, Robert Stigwood. Robert Stigwood was known as the guy who ran the Bee Gees and Cream. He's also the guy that created Jesus Christ Superstar, Evita, Hair, and the film extravaganza, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Well, Robert Stigwood decided that he wanted one of Don Arden's bands, the Small Faces. And he decided, I'm going to go up and just say, Don, I'd like to have your band. I'll buy them out from you. Not one for negotiation, the Al Capone of Pop, Don Arden, took him up to the top of a building and hung him out a window by his ankles.
He really did that?
And shook him until the change in his pockets dropped out and hit the street below. Those were his negotiating methods. Let me tell you a couple other things that this guy did. He was in charge of not only the Small Faces, but the Electric Light Orchestra and the band we're going to play here in just a minute. He was known for basically ripping off the bands that he was in charge of. When the Small Faces were at the absolute height of their game, their mm-hmm. big song, stay with me, mm-hmm. 'cause tonight you're gonna stay with me, he gave them £20 each per week allowance. You can't even eat on that.
Wow.
They were known, or he was known, for letting bands borrow money mm-hmm. from him at these ridiculous interest rates. So not only would he give them a little bit of money, but then they'd borrow money from him, and then he would have to, you know, compound the interest. And basically, bands were in debt to him for basically everything. The very first single that the Small Faces had wasn't really a single. It didn't really hit the chart. Arden fixed it. He basically went to the people that created the charts and bribed them to put the song on the charts. He was fined £12,000 to do that, believe it or not. The band that he did like, though, the band that he was actually a little bit fair with, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Jet Records exists because of Don Arden for Black Sabbath. Luckily, he wasn't paranoid on Rock School. There you go. Remember at the beginning of this manager show here on Rock School, I said that we'd be doing all guys and one woman?
One woman, yeah.
One woman manager.
It's time for the woman.
It's time for the woman manager.
Wait a minute. Now, you said that this was a father-daughter.
Right. So this is Dawn Arden's daughter.
Okay.
Her name is Sharon. So it would have been Sharon.
Wait a minute.
Arden.
Sharon Osbourne?
Sharon married the lead singer of Black Sabbath. His name was, go ahead,
Ozzy Osbourne.
So her name is now
Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon Osbourne. She literally broke with her father and left. Her
wow.
father cut her out of the business, cut her off of anything out of the will, cut her out of the family completely. Had she not made it with Ozzy,
mm-hmm.
she would have been, I mean, broke, destitute completely. She'll tell you, and when you watch the Ozzy Osbourne Behind the Music, there are pictures of them living in the tour bus when they have their first child, which I think is Jack. Isn't Jack the older of the two? There's Jack and then the girl,
Kelly.
Whichever is Kelly, whichever one's the older. When they have, or there's a third girl, isn't there?
Is there?
Never was on whichever one, the first child. They have set up sort of a hammock mm-hmm. in the back. There was no place to put her. There's no money. Her father is this unbelievably rich man, Don Arden, but he's cut her off completely. She states the only thing she ever learned from her father about the world of management was what not to do.
Oh, wow.
That's all she said she learned from him. Luckily, before his death, he was beginning to have the first stages of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
They were able to reconcile before the death. And
that's good.
Apparently, it ended on a nice note, but that's a lot of life to lose.
Yeah.
Over money and anger and all of that stuff. And luckily, she has now, I guess in her estimation, a good life.
Yeah. With
Ozzy.
You can't take it with you. You really can't.
Yeah. So. Nobody gets to put it all in a big bag and walk out with it.
Nope.
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey.
What?
Hey. Hey. Ozzy Osbourne flying high again. That's the one guy that gave Eddie Van Halen a real run for his money there in the 80s.
Is that Randy Rhoads?
Oh, my. Could that guy play? And he's always played that beautiful polka dot guitar. Absolutely love that. Sharon Arden, originally, as we do the managers here on Rock School. Time for one more.
Yep.
Time for one more. Tony DeFries.
Who?
Tony DeFries. He was the manager, original manager of David Bowie when David Bowie was Ziggy Stardust. This guy's hero, Tom DeFries' hero, was Tom Parker. Absolutely loved the guy. David Bowie's first real manager went out of his way to get Bowie on Elvis's label, RCA.
Mm-hmm.
Then he did exactly what Tom Parker did. Took half of Bowie's money. The advance, you know, that you get from a record company?
Yeah.
You're supposed to use that money to buy decent instruments, decent amplification, a tour bus.
Yeah.
Things to get you around.
Okay.
Oh, no. DeFries takes the money, all the money, and flew the press in from all over the world to see Ziggy's concert. Blows the whole thing, and then holds this magnificent glam press conference at the Hotel Dorchester in London. Blows the whole thing. Bowie works under this guy from up until 1975, giving him half his royalties. Listen to what David Bowie had to do to get out from under his contract. To break the contract, he had to give up 50% of every song he recorded before 1982.
Good night.
And 16% of all future royalties up until 1990.
Well, all right then.
This guy, I mean, owned Bowie. Now Bowie's completely away from him, but you can only imagine. Again, this guy had to give money to Bowie, and Bowie had to borrow money from him.
Hmm.
You think to yourself, did you not read this contract? Did you not look forward? Apparently not. So
not.
Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, zero money whatsoever.
Wow.
Tony DeFries ends it. Ends the manager show, and I hope you liked it.
Yeah.
Did you learn something?
I did.
Good. I loved it. There's more that I haven't even spoken about, but
cool, man.
We're out of time. My name is Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P, and if
we'll
you want to syndicate this show, please call our manager.
We would love for you to do it. If you know a radio station that needs us, by all means. See you next week on Rock School. Classes dismissed.